For FingerLakes1.com, I'm Josh Durso, and this is episode 450 of Inside the FLX. Today I'm joined by Newark Police Chief Richard Martin, who was just named Chief of Police a couple of weeks ago. We're going to cover a lot of ground in our conversation, discussing everything from the future of the police department there to recruitment and policing challenges across law enforcement. But first, Chief, you have officially been on the job a couple of weeks here, so I'm curious, what have those early days been like?
It's been a little surreal. After 22 years of being gone from here, coming back, a lot's changed. A lot has changed. Obviously, the faces, but the systems being used, all that is all new to me. So it's been a whirlwind of a lot of passwords and account authentications and certifications and all those, all the minutia. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of time, 22 years. That personal journey for you, what has filled those 22 years that led you to this moment and opportunity?
Yeah. So when I left Newark PD in 2000, I went to the Rochester Police Department. And I spent 11 years there and had a chance to do a lot of various things in Rochester, besides regular patrol, which in and of itself is very unique compared to small town policing. But I got a chance to join the scuba squad. So I was on the scuba squad for about 10 years there. I got a chance to be a field training officer, a firearms instructor. I ended up getting into the crime scene technicians unit. Just nothing I thought I would end up doing, but it sounded worth trying. And it ended up being one of the most fun 5 years I had in my policing career. Fun in a strange way, right? Because crime scenes are never fun, but worked with some really great people, learned a lot of interesting things. And that actually morphed into crash reconstruction towards the end. So I took over that for the Rochester Police Department for the final few years I was there. And then in 2011, I was hired by Cuca College to be their program director for their criminal justice adult studies program, adult completion program, which was something that I had been kind of dreaming of. So I went back to college while I was with the Rochester Police Department, got my bachelor's degree and then my master's degree. And then Cuca College hired me. And while there, I went on and got my PhD for my tenure. So I was at Cuca for 10 years and recently left there in June of 21 to actually kind of go back into the policing world, a little on the tertiary, as they say, with the Division of Criminal Justice Services in New York, with their Gun Involved Violence Elimination Program, which was fascinating because I got a chance to learn a whole other side of things, more at the executive level in policing, and got to interact with a lot of really good people in law enforcement from probation, parole, policing, all the way from Syracuse to the Buffalo Niagara region. So that was quite the experience. And then this opportunity presented itself, and you know, I have roots here now. So I raised my family here. My daughter grew up and graduated from Newark High School. You know, I kind of felt like I had something to offer and decided to accept the job.
And I want to get back. I want to get into in a few minutes here, your roots and the beginnings of your law enforcement career. But I'm curious, you mentioned that sort of crossroads where you decided you were going to step back into policing in sort of a more direct way, and now in your current role, clearly very on the front lines of policing. What was it that brought you to that moment where you felt like, despite everything going on in the world, and especially in the world of policing, you felt like it would be you could do your best work and be the best service to the community by getting back in direct work again?
Are you talking about my time with DCGS or coming back to Newark?
Yeah, just going from the academic, transitioning from the academic to the direct policing work again.
Yeah, I felt it was time for a change, first of all, and these were new positions within DCGS, so they had never had field reps for their GIVE program before. Cool. What they were looking for was something that really truly fit my exact skill set. So it was the experience of policing along with the academic credentials, I guess, for lack of a better term, because it's very much rooted in the research, right? What we're doing is we're really trying to drive evidence-based policing to enculturate that in the agencies across the state. And with the sharp spike in violent crime that we've been seeing across the country, but particularly in New York State, I felt that combination of evidence-based policing that matched my experience and credentials, I felt like it really did kind of feel like it was custom made. So I really had to try it. And it started out as a part-time job and very quickly morphed into full-time because not just me, but two other colleagues across the state that were also hired to do that. I think we showed our value in being able to help police departments and help, kind of in a consultative role more so than in an assessment role, which I think was not necessarily the plan when they hired us, but it ended up being a very good match, having somebody there kind of embedded, as it were, with all these agencies from the state.
So obviously long career in criminal justice, I'll say overall. When you go back, I'm talking well before 20 years when your career started, or 22 years when your career started, when you go back to the beginning, what was it that prompted you to pursue a career in law enforcement to begin with? When was it, and what was it for you?
Yeah, I had an interesting history, I think, because I never wanted to be a police officer. I had no desire, really didn't like police officers growing up. So I joined the military out of high school and didn't like MPs. I just, had no desire. But when I got out of the military, it's one of those things where you realize you need some education. So I went to the local community college and they had this thing called criminal justice. And I said, uniforms and guns, I know that world. So let's give that a shot. And it was really the teachers at the community college who were still active sheriff's deputies with the county agency. I went to Jamestown Community College in their Cattaraugus County campus. And I started learning that this could be a very worthwhile pursuit for a career. And when you think about what drives people to go into the military service, it's similar things that I realized drive people to go into the profession of policing and be true police, true professionals in the police world. So that's how I ended up. I finished my associate degree in the Chautauqua County Sheriff's Academy, is affiliated with Jamestown Community College. And I competed to get into the community colleges or the Chautauqua County Sheriff's Academy and put myself through the academy. And that's how it happened.
So when you were looking at the opportunity in Newark, we've obviously learned a little bit about what got you to that moment where you saw the Newark opportunity and accepted the Newark opportunity. I'm curious, though, when you looked at Newark, beyond just being, a place where you had established roots and your family and whatnot, what did you see in Newark that made you feel like this was the right opportunity and the right police department to become the chief of?
Well, I think the biggest driving force was just the fact that it was the town I live in, that I had that personal investment. I wasn't seeking a chief's job. I hadn't considered being a chief until Chief Tomes announced he was stepping down, and then thought, because of my personal investment in the town, and I thought with my experience as well as my education. So my PhD is actually in organizational leadership. So I've been studying leadership really my entire life, but obviously an intense 4 years to earn my PhD. And I thought, now is the time to really put my money where my mouth is. And step up if they think that they could use me. So I threw my hat in the ring and here I am.
Here we are, is right. So first 3 to 6 months when you are going through sort of the game planning process, once you get logged into all those accounts and you figured out all the passwords, what are your top priorities for, say, the first 6 months, or even looking a little further out toward a year? Mm-hmm.
So the specific goals are going to come as I acclimate more, right? My priority now that, like you said, all the systems have been logged into, I got all those credentials taken care of, is to learn. when I was with Keuka College, they did a presidential search, and they did focus groups, and well, for the president and the provost. And the consulting firm that they hired asked the question to the focus groups, what do you expect of the provost when he or she comes in during the first 3 to 6 months? And a lot of people gave answers about focusing on this, changing that. And I said nothing, to which I got a lot of raised eyebrows. And I said, look, somebody coming in from the outside needs to spend some time learning about the organization, the people, the culture, before they come in and make wide sweeping changes, because there's probably some very good reasons why things are done the way they are. And then sometimes there's not. So that's the balance you have to find. So I'm going to be doing a lot of observing, a lot of talking to the officers, riding with the officers. I'm feeling very trapped in my office for the first couple of weeks, but the plan is to get out there and really learn about them and the culture and what they need, because I'm a big fan of Jim Collins' A Good to Great philosophy. And back in 2000, I think it was 2007, there was actually a rather in-depth article about good to great in policing specifically. And I always kept that article. So I pulled it out, obviously, when I learned I was getting the job, to kind of go back and re-envision what that's going to look like. So already some of the groundwork has been laid with redefining the, or re-exploring, I guess, the mission, vision, values of the Newark Police Department. And that really needs to be driven by the officers and the people who are doing the work. So I'm very much looking forward to facilitating that as a leader, and getting a good clarification about what we really need to focus on as our values, because our values will really drive everything. And the more clear we can be on our values, and the more we can more intentionally focus on the culture we want to create, then the better the organization. And that takes it from a very good organization that it is now. And I think we'll get it to that great state, you know, in the next couple years.
And I'm curious, how do you incorporate, because I'm certain there's going to be a desire from the community standpoint to be a little involved in this process as well. How do you engage, or how do you plan to engage with the community? What methods are most effective in your experience with engaging the community with police related issues or those mission related issues?
Well, I think that's one of the advantages of working in a small town. And what I like about working, you know, coming back and working in a small town, is that a lot of that happens organically. You know, when I'm out in the community, not working, I'm going to the restaurants, I'm hitting the supermarkets, and people will recognize you and they'll approach you and they'll talk to you. And I've already had people stop into the police department in my first couple of weeks to talk and introduce themselves. And so that's the fun thing about working in a smaller town, is that you really get a chance to connect more with people organically. But in addition, there does have to be that intentionality, because there's going to be voices that I don't hear from if I'm not more intentional. And that was my big criticism, I think, over the last several years in policing, is that we were hearing a lot of loud voices, but were we really hearing all of the voices? And I guarantee you we weren't, because these neighborhoods that were experiencing the highest levels of violence weren't being heard, because they wanted the police in their neighborhoods. They knew they needed the police to help protect them in those neighborhoods, and the police wanted to help protect them, and their voices weren't being heard. So there's got to be a very intentional, and I haven't laid the entire plan out, to be honest with you, but I am promising to be very intentional to make sure that I don't just hear the loudest voices, that I hear as many voices as I can in Newark. So if that ends up being community meetings, sometimes that's a good idea. But again, a lot of times who we see attend those meetings are the ones that want to be the loudest, not necessarily all of the voices. So that's going to be a tricky one. I've already, you know, I just came off a 3-year term with the Newark School Board prior to being hired. And I saw a lot of those connections, I think, are going to help, you know, because the school is a huge part of the community, obviously. So kind of using some of those things that I've learned in a lot of those contacts that I made from the school board experience to really make sure, because you're right, without fully understanding the voice of the community, you lose you lose something.
Yeah.
Or you miss something. And that's a dangerous thing.
So a couple of weeks ago when I interviewed Mayor Taylor, we had obviously just come off of a tragedy in the village, active police investigation of the homicide that happened near a local bar. And I was curious, I asked him, I said, how do you balance between the perception that's created by isolated incidents? Because at the end of the day, as sad and tragic as it is, the village of Newark is not a violent high crime community, right? Everybody can agree with that. But there is the perception after something bad happens that there needs to be more attention or more policing or more of something to make sure that these things never, ever happen again. And I'm curious, how do you balance that? Because it tends to be, in from my perspective, it looks like an evaluation of what rural policing should look like versus what it should not look like. And it seems like some folks, when they hear about something bad happening in their community, they automatically assume that, well, we need more policing. And I'm just curious how you plan to approach or how you think about these kinds of issues on sort of a philosophical level, because it's probably one of the most basic pieces of reader feedback that we see just in the daily grind of publishing police reports and things like that on our website. There's often, I think, a misconception of how rural policing should play out. And I'm curious where you sort of sit in that whole thought process.
You know, I actually love this question. I really do, because it's the heart of what we do, right, in policing. So if you think about what I was talking about with my role at DCJS and helping to drive agencies to evidence-based policing, that's not just for large cities. We all have to be evidence-based in our approach. There's a tendency, and like you said, that we, you know, when I was with the Rochester Police Department, we used to call it Operation Shut the Barn Door, right? Because there's that adage, you shut the barn door after the horse has already escaped. Because there was this kind of ongoing philosophy that wherever the last homicide happened, we're going to flood the area with police officers, right? And we're going to, what, prevent the next homicide? I mean, it was ineffective and it was a waste of resources is what it was. Did it make some of the community feel a little safer? Yeah, I'm sure it did to an extent. But is it really the best use of police resources, right? Probably not. So, very, very targeted. One of the things with the gun involved violence elimination program is intelligence driven policing, right? It's knowing who your top offenders are, it's knowing where your hot spots are, and it's addressing those from a problem analysis perspective. So you're not just flooding the area with police cars where you end up stopping, you know, that dragnet concept where you end up stopping half the people that live in the neighborhood that aren't the problem, right? And then it causes a little bit of a riff in the community because now the police are ticketing and stopping citizens who really aren't driving the violence or the problems that are out there. So there's really kind of a multi-pronged approach here is not only the evidence-based policing aspect, but it's also educating the public, right? And it's being open and transparent and being willing to tackle those tough issues. And one of the things that I've seen with the Newark Police Department is that we don't have a presence out there in social media. So I'm hoping to very soon try to get like Facebook and Twitter accounts where we can communicate. And that there goes towards that community input as well, right? Because now you've got a two-way path where you can communicate directly with the community and they can communicate with you. And we can put some of those fears to bed when people are like, you know, worried that gangs are running rampant because we happen to have a one shooting at the north end of town. And that was an isolated incident. And it isn't indicative, as you mentioned, of what Newark is like.
And my last question for you here is sort of a big picture one. We hear about it every day, recruiting, the challenges law enforcement as overall is facing. When you think about the recruiting challenges that law enforcement has presently, your part, where do you fit in the bigger picture? And what do you think some of the things that could be done to maybe help to build that recruitment up a little bit in the future?
Yeah, that's a very complex one, and it needs to happen at various levels from the very top. So one of the things that, because I was hearing that across Western New York every time I would interact with the agencies, you know, all the way from Sarah, and my colleagues were hearing the same thing. There's just nobody wants to be a police officer anymore. Well, if you back up, right, to the George Floyd murder, we understand why nobody, because there was such hyper-criticism. And it happened at the very top, and it happened all the way down to the lowest community levels. So I've been prompting organizations like the New York State Chiefs of Police, the New York State Sheriff's Association, the District Attorney's Association, to emphasize the need at the higher levels to not demonize us, but recognize that police officers, probation officers, parole officers are a key part of public safety. And we've seen that change a little bit. Governor Hochul has really, she attended the DCGS symposium in September and really pledged her support to law enforcement. And so we're starting to see that in Rochester with the new mayor, Malik Evans, came right out very quickly and said that, look, the police are part of the solution, not part of the problem. But also recognizing, you know, we have to continue to evolve and get better. But then at the lowest levels, if you think about it, what we're seeing in organizations across the country are the police officers themselves telling these young men and women who may be interested in exploring a career in law enforcement to not do that. They're steering them away for, you know, obvious reasons, and I'm not criticizing them, but the better we can make the environment for the men and women working in the field, the more we can get back to that root of why you took the job, and that more altruistic motivation to realize that what they're doing is truly important. They can be some of our biggest recruiters. And that's really my tactic, is to really get the men and women of the Newark Police Department really loving the job and shouting it from the hilltops that this is a great organization to work in and a very good profession to dedicate your life to.
All right, Chief, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for taking it.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Inside the FLX is a production of FingerLakes1.com Digital Media. We drop new episodes on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the iHeartRadio app every week. So if you want to stay up to date with the latest, follow on any of those platforms. You can also stay up to date with the latest by signing up for our daily newsletter. They are delivered by email every morning and bring you the biggest interviews, latest breaking news, and information you need to get your day started. Check out our homepage to learn more. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next time.